Welcome to KHD Bible Study Podcast. My name is Reb Emanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilat HaDerech Messianic Synagogue in New York City. Each week, I lead a detailed study from a Messianic Jewish perspective into the Holy Scriptures, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. We hope you will join us as we explore the 12 prophets. Thank you for joining us as we begin the book of Micah. On your screen, for those of you who are live, you're looking at the kings that Micah prophesied to during this time period. But Micah reigned, or shall I say prophesied, during the reigns of King Uzziah, King Jotham, which in Hebrew is Jotham, and King Ahaz and King Hezekiah. And so you'll see a little brief summary there showing the progression of the kings. So he's prophesied quite a bit of time. What you will find is that his book is very small, and yet he has a major impact on biblical history and actually even on our own history, because Hezekiah was one of the kings that he ministered to, prophesied to as well, and prophesied against in some cases. But he was one of the kings that he ministered to. And so in some ways, the book of Micah, when it is looked at in terms of actual history, is confirmed by archaeological excavations and digs that are currently taking place in Israel. So let's look at the prophet Micah. He is a bridge between the biblical kingdoms of the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah and our modern history. He helps identify where the Messiah will be born. Not insignificant. He gives us the details of the coming kingdom of redemption when all the remnant of the lost tribes will be gathered. And he does it with style and poetry. And his prophecies jump through time with a style many readers would actually miss. And we're going to point out some of the phrases that allow you to see these time jumps as he prophesies. Some biblical books are disputed by scholars and historians, but Micah's book is actually bursting across timelines. For instance, Jeremiah, who comes approximately 30 to 40 years later, a little over 30 and almost 40 years after Micah, makes reference to Micah. There are prophecies. Let's put it this way. The Magi in Persia based their timing on when the king of Israel was to be born, based on the words of Micah. Not a small thing. They literally waited for all of that time, from the time that they were exiled in Babylon until the time of the new century. And then they received the signs that they needed to see that it was time to go to the small town where the king of Israel was going to be born. So not a small, insignificant prophet. Now we have, most of you have seen the movie that we had on one of the main kings of the period. As you can see, if you scroll down a little further on the diagram that we have on our screen, you'll see there's the bulla that they have unearthed. On the back of that bulla is a symbol. Now, the people in the movie didn't talk about it much, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it right now. Basically, the reason why some of the bullas that were fakes that appeared early is because they took that sun disk, which is in the middle of the wings, and they turned it into an Egyptian scarab. And that's why many historians looked at those bullas and said, those are fake. They're not real. What Hezekiah did in his bulla is actually based on scripture. You see, the little round disc between the two wings is actually meant to be the sun. The rays coming off, although it's hard, if you can zoom in a little bit to the bottom, the area beneath the wings, I don't know how I should be able to go in pretty good. Okay, if you look closely, normally when you see the rays of the sun depicted in art, they are pointed. So these rays are not pointed. They have little round discs at the end of each ray. And that symbolism, to anyone who knows and reads the scriptures and who has read the story of King Hezekiah, know that his story was his life was about to end. His story was over. He appealed to God, and God extended his life. That's one of the reasons why you'll see the Egyptian Ankh symbols on both sides. Even though we know it's Egyptian, and it was Egyptian then, and it's Egyptian now, that symbol universally meant or symbolized life. So it was a part of this impression that he used. Those little balls at the end of the rays of light, we have come to understand, although over time, they've kind of washed off, all the detail has been washed away. They're actually time dials, sundials. So the rays are pointing to sundials, and the rays or the light, the rods that you see there indicate time rolled backwards. Now, why does that make a difference? Well, if you know the story of King Hezekiah, you'll know that that's what happened in his life. So this bulla was made after his life was extended. Let me go ahead and read you something. This will help, I think, perhaps crystallize what Hezekiah is trying to do. The symbols included in this bulla, you can find in Psalm 84 and Psalm 91, and later on, much later in time, in Malachi 3:20. In Malachi 3:20, it says, "But you who revere my name, the Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings. Then you will go forth and skip about like calves from the stall." So let's make that bulla a little more realistic for you. To the people of the time period, God had literally had wings. It's mentioned in Psalms 84, Psalm 91. Now, we don't know if they believe that they do, but we do know that they believed that the angels had wings. There were some angels who did have wings. There are obviously many angels who did not have wings, but some angels had wings. So if you're looking up from the ground at the sun, you would see these wings hovering over you. So the position of the artist is from the ground looking up at the sun, and he sees these wings stretched out below him or above him. And the three dials, the three sundials, indicate that God made time go backwards as proof to Hezekiah that he would be healed. It's a wonderful story. All right, but let's go forward. So, one important mention. I said Malachi 3:20. That's true in the TLV, the Tree of Life version of the Bible, and the Complete Jewish Bible. It is not true in some of the Christian Bibles. Some of the Christian Bibles will take Malachi chapter 3 and divide it into two. So if you want to find that same verse, you'd have to look at Malachi chapter 4, verse 2. So King, as I mentioned, King Hezekiah clearly had these coins minted after his life was extended, as told in, and I'll give you the verse, 2 Kings 20, 9 through 11. And for those of you who remember, Isaiah had delivered the message that his time was up, and Hezekiah turned his face to the wall, and he cried bitterly and prayed to God, and God heard him in his prayer. And before Isaiah's foot crossed the threshold to leave the palace, God spoke to Isaiah and told him to turn around and go back and speak to King Hezekiah. Micah prophesied in the days of King Hezekiah. as did Isaiah, and in the north, before the fall of Jerusalem, before the fall of Samaria, Amos and Hosea. Micah's name was never given in the scriptures. Micah was from Moresheth, or Moresheth Gath would be more accurate. Although in the scriptures they've shortened the term and turned it into Moresheth, but there is no city called Moresheth. There's only a Moresheth Gath, which is a small town in Judah. Let's go ahead and show the image, which is important for what happened. If you can zoom into that cluster down there near Jerusalem, not too far. There we go. All right. For those of you who have the handout, you'll notice that Jerusalem is listed there as a marker. The kings of Assyria pummeled all of those towns all around Jerusalem. They had conquered Samaria and carried it off. And but for those of you who are not clear about this, the distance between Samaria and Jerusalem is about 70, 80 miles or so, depending on the terrain. I believe you could take a bus. Well, there's no bus that goes directly from Samaria to Jerusalem in modern times, but you can easily take a car and it'll take you a couple of hours to get there. If you were walking or walking with with a mule, if you were walking by foot, no animals with you, it would probably take you about 15 hours to walk from Samaria down to Jerusalem. And of course, it would be a lot faster if you were going by mule, because that area is very hilly. There's hills and valleys and the whole bit, so it's not easy to navigate. But the historians call Micah the rural prophet, meaning they believed that he was in a small rural village outside of Jerusalem. If you look closely, you'll see that there's a cluster of cities there. I put some of the names there, Zaman, Gath. You'll see some of these names in chapter one. And the one with the red arrow at the top of the cluster of three, that there's a red arrow there. You'll see that that is where he's from. That point, that red arrow is pointing down at that little blip on the map just before there. These cities were not small. The evidence of that is that when the kings of Assyria came and destroyed all of those cities, they made reliefs and put them on their walls. Bas reliefs were put on their walls in the palace to show how they had conquered and devastated Jerusalem. I'm sorry, conquered and devastated Judah in the same way they had conquered and devastated Samaria. So they were quite proud of it. The one thing they could not do was they could not conquer Jerusalem. And the reasons for that, again, are in the book of Kings and Chronicles. So some prophets like to call him a rural prophet, but if you look at the scenes, the images, these were not rural cities. These were not little small towns. The king of Assyria is not going to take his throne and put it out in the middle of Lachish, and in other words, if the town is insignificant, the king is not going to set up his throne to go there and conquer it, which he did in these cities. So these cities were not small, and it's very likely that Micah was not a rural prophet, just a little small town guy running up and around naked, making pronouncements. That's the image that some people like to project of Micah. That is not Micah at all. Micah's messages were against corruption and idolatry that crept down from the northern kingdom. Another reason why we have this map. Like I said, it's only 15 hours to walk from the capital of Samaria into Jerusalem. So the idolatrous practices of the kingdom of Israel, when had started to kind of blend into Israel, into Judah from the northern tribes of Israel. It was very easy. It was a short walk. And after Assyria had destroyed all the cities in the north, many of which are not on this map right now, but many and carried off many of the people, some people who were alive fled, obviously. they went down into Judah. So this time period when Micah is beginning to prophesy is the beginning of the downfall of Judah, the kingdom of Judah. Now, for the first time, we are having the same idolatrous practices that were practiced in the north, infiltrating and entering Jerusalem, even into the temple. And those of you who've taken my class on the book of Ezekiel know that some of the priests had gone into the inner chambers inside the temple and had etched on their idolatrous images of their gods. So the temple had become corrupted by the time that the Babylonians came and destroyed it. But I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. Let's keep on going here. So the amazing thing about this, about Assyria, is these drawings, these bas reliefs that we see, were actually lost. They were lost to time. By the time of the Middle Ages, people kind of heard about Nineveh. They thought of it as a fictional city. And of course, if Nineveh was fictional, then perhaps much of Jerusalem and much of what Judah was and much of Israel was fictional as well. No one could find these places. They had been buried over with dirt and mud. By the 1800s, in the modern era, the fabled city of Nineveh was discovered under dirt mounds by the French and the British. They came looking for artifacts, costly artifacts. In 1849, the British discovered the lost palace of Sennacherib. So they found 20,000 clay tablets or more, and they found these beautiful reliefs that you see here. This is only a portion. Literally, they built a section of the British Museum and lined up the walls with all of this artwork showing the sieges that took place during this time period. So up until now, like I said, during the Roman period, they had heard about Nineveh, but they weren't sure where it was. There was the story of the Hanging Gardens. There was the story of Nineveh. But no one really knew where the cities were because by that time they had been buried under dirt and mud, and they were kept hidden until the 1800s. The wall of Nineveh actually reveal the fulfillment of Micah's prophecies, and they confirm the events of the siege of Israel and Judah. So the events of Micah were not just pronouncements that were meant to be just put out and, you know, things would happen and maybe there might be a little bit of warfare or whatever. They were real. The destruction of the region was epic, and it's recorded on these reliefs on the palace walls. Literally, if you go to this museum, the British Museum, and I believe they have some work still visible online, you will see walls and walls lined with these images of how the Assyrians went in, destroyed all of these cities, all those little red dots you see there. They were gone, wiped out, demolished, destroyed. Only Jerusalem remained standing during that time period, although the people, of course, rebuilt some of the areas. But the devastation was complete. So from a 20th century perspective, yes, Micah looks like he came from some little rural village. And if you were to look at satellite images of that area, you'd see lots of farmland and suburbs. And people would think, okay, well, there were very few people there, but that's not the case. Because you can see from the reliefs that the Assyrians made, there were a lot of people there. And they did a ton of destruction. So, where once scholars and historians doubted the events of the Holy Scriptures, the events have been confirmed by the very same people who conquered Israel. And the truth was hidden until the 1800s. And really evacuated in 1849 by the British in particular and carried away to the museums. So I would say that Micah's prophecies owed a good deal of weight to them. Not bad for a rural prophet. So let's go ahead and take a, before we get into the book, let's go ahead and take a brief overview of some of the prophecies of the man from Moreshite. And I also want to point out one prophecy that many, many, many people miss completely. You won't see this talked about much. It's in Micah 2, verses 12 through 13, a prophecy of the regathering of the lost tribes with Judah. Reading Micah 2, I will surely gather Jacob, all of you. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like sheep in a pen, like a flock within its pasture. They will be noisy with people. Before I go on, in the time period that this is written, Israel is about to be carried off into captivity. All of that area north of Jerusalem, for the most part, north of Jerusalem, is about to be carried off into captivity. All of those people will disappear into time. So this prophecy is of the remnant that will be brought back to Israel. Continuing on, one breaking through will go up before them. They will break through, pass through the gate, and go out by it. Their king will pass through before them, Adonai at their head. Micah 2, verses 12 through 13. So here we have a clear prediction that, or a prophecy that the king will return. He will gather all of his people, the remnant from all of the lost tribes that are spread out in all the nations. They will be brought back. A remnant of them will be brought back, and they will be gathered and gathered under the new kingdom of redemption led by Adonai himself. As he says, Adonai at their head, their king will pass through before them. So before we start reading, there's key passages I want you to pay attention to. Micah 1, verses 2 through 7. He talks about the coming judgment on Samaria and Jerusalem. Micah 3 is prophecies against the corrupt leaders, the priests, and the prophets. He was giving them one message. Isaiah was giving them one message, the same message. But the prophets in Israel and Judah were telling the people, oh, don't worry. We have the temple. Everything's going to be all right. We're good. We're covered. Micah 4 is a prophecy of the redemption of the entire house of Jacob. It's a beautiful chapter. Micah 5, and in particular, verse 2, prophecies about the Messiah deliverer to be born in Bethlehem. And as I mentioned earlier, the Magi in Persia were aware of this prophecy and they had calculated it down to the time of his birth. So they crossed that distance from Persia all the way into Jerusalem at the time, near the time when the Messiah was to be born in Bethlehem. And they were there. Although they were delayed by the king, they were able to find him after he had moved from Bethlehem to his home. Micah 6, verses 8. And actually, Micah 6 is really an amazing chapter. Adonai has a message for all of humanity. I won't spoil it for you. I'll leave it at that. And then Micah 7, verses 18 through 20, Adonai reveals what has become of hu the humanity, the state of humanity. Some things that we will find pretty close to the way things are today. And he promises that the nations, all of the nations, will submit and that he will forgive the sins of his people. I will say one thing before we get started. Micah is a study in subtlety. You'll see phrases that indicate time shifts. Like you'll see phrases like the latter days, in that day. These are transition words, transition phrases that tell you that he's shifting from the present day to the future. And as we know from all prophecy, it can be. It can have multiple fulfillments. It can happen in that time of the prophecy. It can happen a few years later, and it can happen centuries later. So be aware of the time shifts in that day, the latter days. Let's go ahead and now let's listen to the book of Micah, chapters 1 through 4.
Micah 1. The word of Adonai came to Micah, the Moreshite, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, visions he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Hear, O peoples, all of you. Attention, O land, and everything in it. Adonai Elohim will be witness against you, the Lord from his holy temple. For behold, Adonai is coming forth out of his place. He will come down and trample on the high places of the land. The mountains will melt away under him, and the valleys will split apart like wax before the fire, like water being poured down a slope. All this is because of Jacob's transgression and the sins of the house of Israel. Who is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? Who are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? So I will make Samaria into a ruin in the countryside, planting places for vineyard. I will hurl stones into the valley and will lay bare her foundations. All her images will be smashed, all her prostitutes pay burned with fire, and all her idols I will make desolate. For from prostitutes' pay she collected them, and to prostitutes' pay they will return. Concerning this, let me lament and howl. Let me walk barefoot and naked. I will make a howl like jackals and a mourning like ostriches. For her wounds are incurable. For it has come up to Judah. It has reached the gates of my people, even up to Jerusalem. Tell it not in Gath. Weep not at all. At Beth lay Ephrah. Roll in the dust. Pass on, you who dwell in Sefer. Nakedness and shame. She who dwells in Zaanan will not come out. Wailing of Beth Ezel, he will take from you its standing place. For she who dwells in Maroth has languished for something good, for calamity has come down from Adonai to Jerusalem's gate. Harness the chariot to the steed, O inhabitant of Lachish. It was the beginning of sin for the daughter of Zion, because in you were found the rebellions of Israel. Therefore you will give parting gifts to Moresheth Gath, houses of Akzib, as a deception to the kings of Israel. Yet I will bring the possessor to you, inhabitant of Marisha. The glory of Israel will come as far as Adullam. Shave yourself bald, yes, share your hair for the children of your delight. Enlarge your bald spot like a vulture, for they went from you into exile.
Micah chapter 2. Oy to them who scheme wickedness, who work out evil upon their beds. In the light of the morning they do it, for the power it is in their hands. They covet fields, so they seize them, or houses, and take them away. So they oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. Therefore, thus said Adonai, behold, I am scheming a calamity against this family from which you cannot remove your necks. Then you will not walk haughtily, for it will be a time of distress. In that day he will lift up a parable for you, and there will be wailing lamentation, saying, we have been utterly ruined. He changes the portion of my people. How he removes it from me. To the faithless he apportions our fields. Therefore you will have no one casting for your for territory by lot in the congregation of Adonai. Do not prophesy, they prophesy. Unless they prophesy about such things, he will not turn back reproaches. It is said, O house of Jacob, is the Ruach Adonai short of patience? Are these his deeds? Do not my words deal well with one who walks uprightly? But recently my people arose as an enemy. You strip off the outer robe of a garment from those passing through confidently, those returning from war. The wives of my people you cast out from their exquisite houses. From her young children you take away my splendor forever. Arise and go, for this is not the resting place because of uncleanliness that destroys, a grievous destruction. If a man walking in spirit of falsehood speaks lies, I will prophesy for you of wine and strong drink, and he would be a spokesman of this people. I will surely gather Jacob, all of you. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together like a sheep in a pen, like a flock within its pasture. They will be noisy with people. One breaking through will go up before them. They will break through, pass through the gate, and go out by it. Their king will pass through the king will pass through before them, Adonai at their head.
Chapter 3. Then I said, "Hear, leaders of Jacob, rulers of the house of Israel. Is it not for you to know justice, you haters of good and lovers of evil? You are robbing their skin from them and their flesh from their bones. Now that they have eaten the flesh of my people, stripped their skin off from them, and smashed their bones to bits, they cut it up like flesh in a pot, or like meat within a cauldron. Then they will cry out to Adonai, but he will not answer them. Thus he will hide his face from them at that time, because of their evil deeds. Thus said Adonai about the prophets who are misleading my people, those who bite with their teeth and cry, 'Shalom,' a word that he did not put in their mouth. Yet they consecrate war against him. Therefore, you will have night without vision and darkness without divination. The sun shall set on the prophets. The day shall become dark upon them. So the seers will be ashamed and the diviners will be abashed. Indeed, all of them will cover their lips, for there will be no answer from God. Nevertheless, I myself am filled with power, with the Ruach Adonai, with judgment and with might, to declare to Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin. Hear this, leaders of the house of Jacob, rulers of the house of Israel, you who abhor justice and twist everything upright, who build up Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with injustice. Her leaders give judgment for a bribe. Her priests give direction for a price. Her prophets practice divination for money. Yet they lean on Adonai by saying, 'Is not Adonai in our midst? No calamity will come upon us.' Therefore, because of you, Zion will become a plowed field. Yes, Jerusalem will become a heap of ruins, and the Temple Mount will become a high place in a forest."
Chapter 4. But at the end of days, the mountain of Adonai's house will be established as chief of the mountains and will be raised above the hills. Peoples will flow to up to it. Then many nations will go and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of Adonai, to the house of God, of the God of Jacob. Then he will direct us in his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the Torah will go forth from Zion, and the word of Adonai from Jerusalem. He will judge between many peoples and decide for mighty nations far off. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations will not lift up sword against nation, nor will they learn war again. But each man will sit under his vine and under his fig tree, with no one causing terror, for the mouth of Adonai Tzavaot has spoken. Though all the peoples will walk, each in the name of his God, so we ourselves will walk in the name of Adonai Eloheinu forever and ever. In that day, it is a declaration of Adonai, I will gather her who is limping, and her who was banished will I collect, even those whom I have afflicted. I will make her who was limping into a remnant, and her who was banished, a mighty nation. Adonai will reign over them on Mount Zion from that time and forever. But you, watchtower of the flock, are the hill of the daughter of Zion. To you she will come. Even the former dominion will come, the kingdom of the daughter of Jerusalem. Why are you crying out loud now? Is there no king within you? Has your counselor perished so that agony has gripped you like birth pains? Writhe and give birth, daughter of Zion, like a woman in labor. For now you will go forth from a city. You will dwell in the field, and you will come as far as Babylon. There you will be rescued. Then will Adonai redeem you from the hand of your enemies. But now many nations have assembled against you. Those who are saying, let her be defiled, and let our eyes gaze on Zion. But they do not know Adonai's thoughts, nor understand his plan, for he has gathered them like grain to a threshing floor. Arise and tread, daughter of Zion, for I will make your horn iron, and I will make your hooves bronze. You will thresh many peoples. I will devote their unjust gain to Adonai, their wealth to the Lord of all the earth. Now gather yourself in troops, O daughter of troops. He has laid siege against us. With a staff, they have struck the judge of Israel on the cheek. I wish to thank all of those who have read tonight and extended invitation to anyone listening tonight. If you'd like to be one of our readers next week, please let me know. One thing I'd like to point out before we move on to the next section of Micah is there are certain terms that have deep meaning that are in this book that appear elsewhere in other prophets and in other books. You'll see the term watchtower, the daughters of Zion. These are beautiful terms. You can use them to use as a search term to search the scriptures and see, for instance, that the daughter of Zion and the daughters of Zion varies through time. It refers to various peoples. And it's a beautiful statement because these are also terms that he uses to talk about his people. We often hear many other terms, but daughters of Zion is an affectionate term that he uses all throughout. So there, you'll see a lot of beautiful terminology used in the book of Micah. I invite you all to come back again next week where we will finish out the book and we will point out additional insights. Thank you all for coming tonight. I wish you well. Thank you for joining us on our journey through Trei Asar, the 12 prophets. Join us each week as we look in detail at each of the 12 prophets. In the words of Malachi, then those who revere Adonai spoke with each other, and Adonai took notice and heard, and a scroll of remembrance was written before him for those who revere Adonai, even those who esteem his name. So they shall be mine, says Adonai Tzavuoth, in the day I will make my own special possession. So I will spare them as one spares his son serving him. Malachi 3:16 through 17.